it takes is one mindset shift. You get to create your reality. Something's wrong in your life. You can't do this. You can't do that. When did you decide that? What story are you telling yourself? Because that's what reality is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Inside the Inspired. You can't really know where you're going unless you know where you're coming from. It's a lesson that we've talked about many a time on this show. And I'm very fortunate here today to be with a new friend, someone who has put themselves on the line quite literally for their country and focused on building inspiration and motivating individuals, has overcome hardship and put himself through adversity in ways that we're going to learn about how we can conquer together today. So I'm very pleased to welcome my friend, Mr. Joe Fair, the Modern Primal. How are you today, sir?
What's going on, Jonathan? Thank you for the flattering introduction, brother. I'm so stoked to be here today. Funny story, everybody. I actually coached Jonathan's little brother. We're working together again. And yes. That's actually how we met. So I'm stoked to be here, man.
Me too, man. Shout out to Benny. I love you, man. This one wouldn't happen without you. So I'm definitely psyched to make it happen now. And it's funny because I actually came across your content independently of my brother. And I was like, oh, this guy's up to some interesting stuff. And it was cool because you were training for your first marathon. And I believe the goal was to go sub-3, which is very ambitious for a first marathon. And, you know, we'll touch on that. But I want to rewind the clock a bit and talk about your service in the military. Mm. You served in the Navy. What made you want to make that decision?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So basically, I was going through a rough time when I was a teenager. My parents were going through rough times. And so I was indirectly being affected by that. Whenever you're, you know, 16, 17, and you're trying to figure out that next step in life, it can just be super overwhelming because, you know, one, society doesn't prime us for that, you know, unless you have fantastic parents that do, then you're kind of on your own. And so when I graduated high school, I was in this place where I didn't really have any help to go to college, you know, the traditional route. And so the military gave me a way to get out of my current situation, you know, for free, basically. They're like, hey, we got 3 square meals a day. You get to go see the world and we'll pay for your college when you get out. And I was like, say no more. That's exactly what I need. And the rest was history, brother. I joined right after that realization.
And the Navy in particular is unique, right? Because you have all those different units that make up the entire company, I guess we'll say. Mm. In your experience, what do you think dictates your habits today from your military experience?
Mm, man, I wouldn't do anything differently. I mean, first of all, I believe that everything in life happens for a reason, right? Every step that you make, whether it is a crushing success or a mistake, you know, it's all for a reason. It's all to teach you a lesson, as long as you believe that. And so the military for me was just profound in growing as a young man. I was on my own for the first time. I was dealing with adversity. Being away from, you know, friends, family, the comfort of the United States, being on a floating big steel box, you know, and just having to kind of work your tail off. It was just a complete culture shock from what I had been used to previously. And so for one, I mean, it just taught me, you know, how to deal with adversity. Because previously in my life, I had a lot of adversity, but I had no idea how to deal with it. Because I always had mommy or daddy or, you know, some sort of comfort to kind of take it away. And so being on my own and really owning up to my mistakes, owning up to my wins, learning what it means to give and to receive. I learned the law of reciprocity in the military. I was like, oh, well, hey, whenever I'm putting in work, I'm getting good stuff back. And it, for the first time in my life, I was feeling that. And so that's a big, you know, reason that I'm thankful for joining. And then another one is kind of like how you were saying, like it taught me the power of cohesiveness of a unit, right? So each person has their job. It's like a beehive, right? Everybody has to play their part in order to get the honey. I mean, the military is no different. And honestly, a 9-to-5 is no different, but in the military, it's life or death, right? And so you're kind of put to that next level of pressure. And I mean, it just taught me, like, you know, if you're not going to do it, nobody else will. I mean, like, it's if somebody's slacking, you might have to pick up the slack. If you're slacking, somebody might have to have your back. But at the end of the day, the job has to get done. And the best way to make that happen is if everything is cohesive and running smoothly. And so taught me the power of teamwork, really.
And when you look back on those years, I mean, I'll just speak to mine for a second. Like, for me, time management is the thing that stands out the most from my military experience. We'd have to, like, time ourselves how long it would take to brush our teeth, shave, shine our shoes, make our bed, clean our gun, and stand at attention, right? There's, like, this structural element that goes into it, and you touched on it in a few different ways, especially with the cohesion. After you finished your service, what was the next step for you?
Oh man. You know, that brings up a lot, actually, the time management thing, especially because that's probably one of the biggest things that I struggled with once I got out, right? I went from this environment where I was being told where to be, what to wear, at what time, to, you know, the civilian world where you're in charge of your own life, right? And it was a bit difficult for me because I had to learn how to implement time management and how to deal with it. And honestly, it's something I'm still working on today, right? Because especially as an entrepreneur, you are completely in charge of your own time and your own work. And, you know, the more control you have over that, the better your life is going to be. And so it was a huge transition. But yeah, after the military, I got a night shift job working in North Austin. I was working a 12-hour night shift at a semiconductor plant, literally in this thing called the fab, which is where microchips are being fabricated for, like, self-driving cars, iPhones, and various electronics. And I mean, dude, I was in this, like, white suit. I couldn't have my phone in there. And I was just working nonstop for 12 hours. And at first it was really great. The pay was great and everything. And then I started to feel the repercussions of it harming my circadian rhythm. And, you know, at the same time, I was slowly becoming more and more awakened to what society really is, in my opinion. And that's, you know, a little far out to say. We can touch on that more later. But I was like, man, this isn't it. I'm not happy. I'm working for somebody else's mission. I'm like, I want to work for something that I'm passionate about. I want to have a mission that I feel good waking up to go accomplish every day, right? Not just a means to an end. And so, you know, it was basically like adversity in my teenage years to adversity in the military to this other phase of life where I'm just like, oh, again, you know, another try, another crack at something different. And it's still not feeling like it's it. I'm not fulfilled.
That mission that you're talking about, was there a moment that you can point to that helped you realize, hey, I'm not on the right path. I need to direct myself in another direction. What was that moment for you?
Man, that's a great question, honestly. And I'm trying to rack my brain right now. I think it was a culmination, dude. Like I just slowly awakened to who I was. Like I started to ask questions. I started to ask, like, do I really like to do this? Or why am I doing this? Or why am I hanging out with this person? Or why am I putting this into my body? Just like, you know, adopting this ultimately curious mindset. And I mean, that alone is just such a superpower, right? When you start questioning your surroundings, you start questioning why you're doing certain things, you can finally align to start doing things where it's like, why am I doing this? Oh, because, you know, because of this, instead of like, I don't freaking know. And so I guess really just going through the adversity, self-reflection, you know, I thought multiple times, I was like, I wouldn't even want to be friends with myself. You know, this current version of myself, like, you know, constant Irish goodbyes. I mean, I was consumed by the alcohol and the nightlife and meaningless relationships and one night stands. And I mean, literally every unfulfilling thing that you can possibly think of, I was consuming all of it, trying to fill this void, you know, maybe in my heart. But that void of just feeling lost, feeling the need for external validation because there's no self-love within.
It's interesting how you made the undertone about self-love, because for me, that's such a key aspect of what I think enlightenment and awakening, like you were talking about, really is about. Learning how to love yourself, and then you start asking those questions, am I really the person that I want to be? There's something about it that's like, I need a pivot. I need a change, mm-hmm. where the pain outweighs the pleasure. And you know that the thing that you need to do is on the opposite side of the hardest decision that you'll ever have to make. But so are the best sides of who we are. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about those, that compounding, those moments that made up the ultimate catalyst, it seems like there's a theme of, yeah, this isn't it. So asking those questions creates this sequence of thought where you start to almost challenge yourself. And was fitness a pillar in your routine at this point, or is it something that came after the fact? I imagine in the Navy you still had certain regimens that you had to keep up with, but what was your fitness like at this stage?
Yeah, so another great question, man, and this is something I like to touch on often. I like to share this part of my story because I think that this can really give hope to others that, you know, maybe feel stuck in the same place or similar to that past version of me. But I mean, dude, I was working out every single day. You know, I've worked out every single day since I was probably 19. And, you know, but it was without intention and the habits were not there. I mean, it's something that I, you know, touch on every day in my coaching program, something that is just a non-negotiable for me is that, yo, your habits are going to really give you the results that you want to see. You can put in all the hours in the gym, but if the diet doesn't follow, if the sleep doesn't follow, if the lifestyle choices don't follow, then you're not going to see any results. And so I was the guy that was, you know, hitting the bro split at the gym, chest and biceps, and then shotgunning beers with his friends afterwards to celebrate Taco Tuesday, right? We can find any holiday to celebrate. And I was that guy. And so yeah, fitness was there, but it wasn't clicking and I wasn't making too much progress. I mean, I was putting on strength. I think any fitness is good fitness, but to really take it to that next level, I had to implement just amazing habits. And that was something that I really started to just take super seriously when I was working that night shift job, because I was just working and doing research on the side and taking like massive control of my health. And that's when I found the animal-based diet and started to learn about, you know, just what nutrition really is and just prioritizing that whole foods based approach and trying to undo some of that programming that, you know, society and my family had done to me. I'm a Pop-Tart baby. I grew up eating boxes of Goldfish and Pop-Tarts for like every meal. And so when I finally locked in the diet and then the other things kind of slowly around it, I mean, I felt like a superhero. It was night and day.
And I feel like, at least for me right now, I'll have a glass of wine here and there, but I haven't really had more than one or two drinks of hard liquor. And I don't even really talk about this, honestly. I don't really have one or two more drinks of liquor over the course of a year. And that's like including weddings. And that's, it's been like this probably going on 3 years now. And it's kind of happened by like happenstance, right? Like you just, again, realize like the pain outweighs like the pleasure. Like training is hard enough, you know? So from Fabs to fitness and you have this wild trajectory of recognizing this isn't for me, I want to change, and now it's time. You talked about habits. Can you point to some of the habits that you started to implement at that time where the pain just outweighed the pleasure of Taco Tuesday?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I think that, that, you know, I would like to preface this with the fact that these things that I'm about to mention are not sacrifices, right? There is a difference between a sacrifice and an investment. And I want to emphasize that fact. These are all investments that I made in order to become a better version of myself. So, you know, I really prioritized my nutrition. I mean, I started to eat whole foods, prioritize protein, cut out seed oils, cut out the processed foods, processed sugars. And I think that that is optimal for, you know, for the human diet. I'm not, you know, Paul Saladino. I'm not Liver King. I don't only eat steak and eggs. But I do prioritize protein and nutrient-dense foods. And the most nutrient-dense foods on the earth happen to be animal-based foods. And so that's, you know, the majority of my diet. And so that was probably the biggest change that I made. Another one was really starting to take my sleep seriously. And part of that is, you know, part of that ties into nutrition, right? So I stopped snacking and eating, you know, 2-3 hours before bed and noticed tremendous benefit there. Like if you're waking up groggy, try not snacking 2-3 hours before bed and then see how you feel when you wake up. And I bet it'll be a lot better. I implemented, you know, I became aware of blue light, right? My whole life, I had just had my phone plastered to my face. I would literally sleep with my phone like on my face so I could hear calls, you know, if my girlfriend was like, dude, crazy stuff, right? And that's, that, you know, ties into like EMFs, which is another huge, huge, huge issue. But I started taking blue light seriously and similar to snacking before bed, cutting it off 2-3 hours before bed, not watching TV in bed as I'm trying to go to sleep. So counterintuitive, right? Yet so many people think that that's a viable option, which is crazy to me now, but that's only because I am aware, right? I really think that everybody is doing their best. I don't think that anybody is intentionally setting themselves up for bad sleep. I think it's just a lack of awareness and education when it comes down to basically anything that anybody's doing wrong, right? And there's levels to that, you know, within reason. Another thing is I started to prioritize unconventional movements and training, right? So I stopped with the bro split. I started to implement functional fitness. I started to use kettlebells. I started running, right? I was never really a runner. I mean, I ran track in high school. I was not very good. But running, oh my gosh. I mean, not only is it a great aerobic activity, but running is like really where I found the power of doing hard things. Because when you're not a runner and you're trying to be a runner and you're trying to train for like a super ambitious goal, like a sub-3-hour marathon, I mean, some of those workouts were literally the hardest, some of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, and hard is relative. But it just showed me the power of overcoming adversity. I was like, wow, this feels good. My whole life I had taken the easy way out or stopped on the fifth rep, you know, just whenever it gets hard, because I never had to face the repercussions. Right. And then, you know, as I joined the military, as I started to become my own man, I started to face repercussions. And I didn't want to do that, right? And so you can literally, you know, a big way to control the quality of your life is just to intentionally implement adversity, right? Strategically. And so that right there, another thing that I started to do, talking about habits. And then one more that I'd like to touch on is I started to control my environment, right? If you have the Doritos in the pantry, you're probably going to eat them. If you go to the party with the booze and the drugs, then you're more susceptible to take them. And so I started to control my environment and prioritize just meaningful relationships and connections and activities. And I mean, the quality of my life skyrocketed. So yeah, I think those are definitely some habits that I implemented that anybody can literally do for free, right? None of this stuff costs money. None of it, you know, requires coaching. That obviously helps, but like we can do all of that stuff for free. And I think people would be amazed at what some of this stuff would do, right? We're always looking for a pill or a quick fix or like, hey, like what can I buy? Like, it's like, man, just prioritize the habits. And I think you'll get the answers that you want.
So those are all really fantastic, disciplined approaches that clearly yield, as he's drinking his gallon of water, the type of individual that we have here in front of us, right? Military background, discipline, coach, motivator. You know, you mentioned there's one thing for me that I'm particularly curious in that I struggle with, and I imagine the audience does as well. How do you stop snacking 2 to 3 hours before bed?
Yeah, man. No, that's a great question. And I don't all the time. I don't, man. Like I'm not perfect, right? I would like to kind of, I have a few answers to this question. So one, if you do want to snack before bed, just try to choose a good option of proteins and fats, right? So don't go for the popcorn or the potato chips. Go for a glass of bone broth with some butter in it. Or you know, maybe some meat or some eggs, if anything at all. And then also, if you happen to snack, one free, easy thing that you can do to regulate your blood sugar and set yourself up for a successful night of sleep is to just go on a 15 to 20 minute walk afterwards, right? That's an easy, free option that a lot of people can do to just set themselves up for a better night's rest. As far as controlling the snacking before bed, I mean, the best option that I would say is to utilize this little trick called protein leveraging. And so essentially what that is you are snacking on protein throughout the day, or you're accumulating protein throughout the day in order to keep you satiated. Protein is very satiating. A lot of the time, if you feel like the urge to snack or you have a hunger craving and you think, you know, go for a beef patty or something. And if a beef patty doesn't sound good, or if a few hard-boiled eggs don't sound good, you're like, no, that doesn't sound good. I want something else. You're not even hungry, right? That's just like a sugar craving or, you know, you're just going for this, your palate is just wants these crazy modern flavors that are not natural for humans to have. And so I would say, you know, try to get in as much protein as you can throughout the day, stack it early. That way you're not trying to make up for it all at the end of the night, AKA, you know, control the controllables. That's a huge variable that could be really beneficial to a lot of people.
Those are all fantastic tips. The bone broth one, I feel like the universe is telling me I got to get on the bone broth train. There's this spot in New York City. I saw something on Instagram the other day that's compelling me to go check it out. It's like a hole in the wall kind of spot that you can go. I'll find the post and I'll link it in the show notes for everyone. I'll hype up the bone broth spot here in New York City, just in the spirit of trying to stop snacking at night. And I love all those tips. Something that I'm messing with now is tea. I'm trying that out. I'll try fruit, like, which may or may not be the best, like a lot of watermelon or pineapple, or like a mix of both. And then obviously one or five ProMix bars. Those are definitely
I love right? It, man.
Protein leveraging and code inside the Inspired for 20% off your first order. Shout out. But also you could use code Modern Primal, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
I believe code Primal is live on ProMix. I'm not actively promoting, but I think they have phenomenal products. Their protein's amazing. Grass-fed, minimal ingredients, and they have awesome electrolytes. So I'm a huge ProMix fan. Use code Inside the Inspired.
And it's funny because I found out about the electrolytes through my brother via you. So
let's go.
Credit to you for that.
I love it, brother.
And then obviously a big theme with you and a fantastic habit of yours is the modern primal diet. And that is one of the coolest things, how you've adopted your lifestyle to suit your habits. What is the modern primal diet and how has it made an impact on your life?
Man, the modern primal is, I mean, the modern primal as a whole, right, is this idea that...
This episode is brought to you by Slate Milk. Slate Milk is a protein chocolate drink that gives you all the necessary energy after you have finished a hard training session, or also serves as an awesome snack, whether it's hot or cold. I commute 2 hours a day to my job, and every single day after I train, I'm looking for a quick snack or post-workout drink that I don't have to spend time making. So I go into my fridge, I take out my Slate, and I hit the road as fast as I can and enjoy my drink on the way to work. That's the way that I personally like to enjoy it, because there's so many different flavors. So in the morning, the mocha flavor with the caffeine definitely hits. I can also recommend you check out their other flavors. It is a phenomenal brand. They are the number one partner of the UFC. You can actually go to their website, slatemilk.com, type in the code INSPIRED for 10% off your first order. So go ahead, type in the code INSPIRED at slatemilk.com to get 10% off your first order today. This episode is brought to you by ProMix. ProMix is an energy supplement brand that provides a whole plethora of different products, from protein cereal bars to protein shakes, probiotic, prebiotic, deep low products, along with electrolytes, and the list goes on. ProMix is the supplement that I go to for all of my health needs. It has been a game changer for me over the last few months. After the 1,000 pull-up challenge, my immune system was compromised in ways that were super uncomfortable. I kept getting sick, and I knew I needed to level up my game. I didn't place enough value on supplements, but I do now. I spent some time, I did my research, and ProMix is the brand that I decided to work with because my immune system is finally in check. So go check out ProMix.com and type in the code INSIDETHEINSPIRED to get 20% off your first order today. That's right. Go to ProMix.com to get 20% off your first order today with the code INSIDETHEINSPIRED.
You know, we are modern humans, right? Like, we got here for a reason. We were the chosen breed that dominated the earth, and we're so intelligent, and we have all these awesome things that we're constantly creating. There are some amazing people here, amazing humans. And so, you know, I think we should relish in those modern advances. I think we should continue them. But from my point of view, I think society has gotten a little too modern, right? And to tie that into nutrition, right? The modern primal diet, I mean, you go into the grocery store and you know what I'm talking about. Everything is processed. Everything is not ideal for us to be eating. And I mean, there's good stuff, but a lot of it is not, most of it, 90% of it. And so it just makes me sad that this is the societal norm. It makes me sad that people think that that is what they're supposed to be eating based off of, you know, false advertising and basically big food who can, you know, use their dollars to shove it up in everybody's face and be like, this is what you're supposed to be eating. I mean, they even, you know, control the FDA guidelines. You know, there's just no denying it. There's no denying it. The FDA deems a bowl of cereal healthier than ground beef. And so we're super outdated. The story we're being told is not the truth. And that applies to almost every aspect of society. So truly, the mission of the modern primal through nutrition, through habits, through the way that you connect with your loved ones, our mission is to heal the modern man. We are hurting and we don't even know it.
There's one other aspect of the brand that you bring to the table is, I believe it's your product, Chisel Gum.
Mm-hmm.
What was the inspiration behind that?
Yeah, man. So Chisel Gum, you know, echoes that message, right? Heal the modern man. We try to keep that at the forefront of every idea that we have for this company. So that's the goal of Modern Primal Provisions. We have some awesome new products in the works, by the way. But our first is a single ingredient chewing gum. So think about most mainstream chewing gums. Think about the one that you probably have on your counter. I mean, they are literally filled with plastic and chemicals. They are filled with plastic and chemicals, and we're salivating on it and swallowing all those juices, you know, a lot of humans all day long. And it's one of those things where it doesn't seem like it's that bad, right? Those negative results aren't too tangible in the moment, but things like that can compound. And so, you know, we sourced this single ingredient tree sap gum sourced from Greece. It's been used for centuries in the Mediterranean as chewing gum. They grind it up into, they desiccate it and put it in pills in a pill form because it's healing for the gut. And it's a phenomenal product. And I don't think anybody else is really doing a better for you chewing gum at that scale. There are a few out there that aren't too bad, right? It's a better alternative. But I mean, how much better can you get than just a single ingredient tree sap gum? It's primal, but it's modern because we're using it as gum. You know, we're using that tool, and maybe it's for flow state. Maybe you're trying to chisel your jaw because it's 10 times harder than normal chewing gum. Maybe you're trying to take your mind off of something. Maybe you're trying to fast. All of those are really great ways to use the gum, but it's because we're intelligent, modern humans. So it's that perfect synergy of that modern primal. And I'm just obsessed with the gum. So we were like, hey, let's bring it to the States, right? There's a few people that have been selling it here, but not with the mission that we have and not at the scale that we are stepping into.
Well, I'm definitely excited to try it. I know that much. On kind of that note of the modern primal aspect, we were just talking about fitness earlier. You had mentioned running as this very difficult task for you. I think for me, it's in the military, I had to do a lot of it. So it's just something that I could do. And then I could just suffer for a long time. I was like, oh, 15, 20, 30 hour, two. Like you just got to 3 hours. Like you're just like, all right, here we go. But the concept of a marathon never really entered my stratosphere up until a couple years ago. And I know for you, obviously you had that very ambitious goal that we mentioned at the top. And for a first marathon, would you finish around 3:10?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's so impressive. Man. That's so impressive. I appreciate impressive. You. And I know the goal is sub 3, but like, come on. That's kind of borderline unheard of. So it's very, very cool. And I'm interested to know, what was that process like? The before, mm-hmm. during, and after having accomplished this fantastic achievement, but not the goal. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so man, the marathon taught me so, so, so much. I mean, the process was everything that it was supposed to be. I had some pretty long days. I got emotional. There would be certain runs where I would literally start crying tears of joy because I could feel myself getting closer to this ambitious goal that truly, you know, when I set that goal, I really had no business setting that. But that's what's so powerful about it, because if you set goals that you have no business setting, most of the time you're going to at least get pretty damn close if you don't hit it, right? And the marathon really, really taught me that. I mean, just pushing your body, pushing your mind, it's so lucrative for your life every day. I saw the compounding effect. I would go hit my morning run and then I would come back home and just blaze through work because I was just, you know, accomplishing tasks. You know that feeling when you start to check off the to-do list? That's exactly how it was for me. And I really gained just like a lot of momentum throughout the entire block. And I mean, before I even ran the race, I told myself, I'm like, I already got everything I need out of this. It's already told me everything it had to. Like, if you know, you know, right? It's hard for me to explain, but before I ran that race, I was already proud of myself. I had already proved to myself that I was worthy of feeling proud of myself because I earned it. And then, I mean, the race itself was just a grueling beast, dude. The marathon is absurdly hard, right? And hard is relative, again, but to basically run, you know, at your max capacity for 3 to 4 to 5 hours is no easy feat. There's so many variables. You could have an upset stomach. You could have to go to the bathroom a lot. You could catch a cramp. You could roll your ankle in the first 3 miles, you know, like I did. So many things could happen. And my race, it felt like everything happened. And I didn't really, you know, talk too much about it on social media about like the bad parts of the race, because I'm just not a person of excuses. And I'm just like, hey, it was everything it was supposed to be. It exposed a lot of chinks in my armor, essentially. But I mean, dude, I blew up at mile 16. I completely blew up at mile 16. And for the last 8 miles of the race, it was half of the mile I was sprinting, trying to like catch up. Half of the mile I was walking, grabbing my hamstring. And it was just on and off for the entire rest of the 8 miles. And, you know, I still finished with a great time, in my opinion. And so it left me wanting more. It was this massive cliffhanger. And so, you know, in my eyes, I had the fitness to hit my goal that day, but something didn't add up, right? It was in my mind. It was a lack of the strength training in the process. Like, it was a culmination of everything that I did wrong, because as that ultimate responsibility person, you have to do that. Everything is your fault because you're the only one that can fix it. And so, yeah, man, I'm itching to get back there, and I'm just in love with the marathon, right? I don't think running marathons is optimal for human health, right? I don't think you should do it your entire life if you want to be the most optimal human being, but it's damn good for self-development and personal growth.
I'll add one, first off, congrats again. I'll add one thing to that just because you brought it up. No, it's not the optimal thing to do for human health. I still believe that everyone at some point or another should put themselves in some form of doing an endurance event for an extended period of time, because even if it's not optimal for your physical health, that could be used as a cop out. Like, don't cop out. Don't use that as a reason. Oh, well, training is not good for you because like you could get hurt or like overtrain, or it's like, before you worry about getting hurt running a marathon, like, run the mile, you know,
yeah.
Like do the half, like get to the stage where, you know, you have that relativity. I think because there's a lot of trainers out there and a lot of guys who do some very intense and girls who do some very intense training that you hear them often say, I'll never run a marathon. I don't need to. Shredded as they come, super fit, can, you know, they've done the Goggins challenge, but they did rowing instead of running. They just don't want to run marathons. Or top celebrity trainers, I believe Don Saladino, he's talked about, you know, Don Saladino trained like Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman for, so he's like celebrity trainer. And he talks about how he's never going to run a marathon, but he's done a couple halves just because it's not good for your health. But this guy is like, you know, as jacked as they come and cream of the crop. Right. So it really is about putting yourself in that position, just not to cop out, give yourself that milestone to go achieve. So I just wanted to add that in because I feel like you didn't necessarily give someone a license to cop out, but it is at the same time enough of a reason for someone to go back and say, hey, it's not for me. I don't want to put myself in that position. I don't want to risk getting hurt. You might want to risk getting hurt because who you are on the other side, you might like a lot more. So I love how you reflected on it also. It's very honest. There's this self-love that you have going into the race. And then during the race, you experience all this adversity because you're going at max capacity, right? For like those 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then and then you fall short of this like really spectacular goal, kind of like very unheard of, and then have this appetite to go and do more. And for better or worse, in this process, you've experienced some more adversity, right? And, you know, I'll let you share the story in your own words, but you suffered an injury recently, and I know that you're still recovering from it. Could you share with the audience what that process is like?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So for those that are listening, about 8 weeks ago, I unexpectedly fainted when I was going pee. And, you know, off the top of the head, it doesn't sound like, you know, it could be too bad. I probably just fell over or whatever. But the way that I fell, you know, being a 6'6 human being, they say the bigger they are, the harder they fall. That rang true for that day. So I went to flush the toilet. That was the last thing that I remember. And I blacked out. And so all of the doctors that I spoke to, you know, and based off of my symptoms, we concluded that I fell forward and hit the counter with my chin, and I suffered severe whiplash. Like, my neck basically snapped. I felt the muscles all the way down my spine, you know, for the next weeks. And then after that happened, I fell back and hit my head on the bathroom floor, a hard bathroom floor. And I got a severe concussion, right? And oh man, I'm not gonna lie, it was a completely traumatic event. I woke up about a minute later to my girlfriend screaming my name. I opened my eyes and I was like, what happened? Like, I was so scared. My entire body broke out in this like sweat. I got this crazy fever when I woke up. We had to strip me naked. And I went to the emergency room and they ran a bunch of tests on me. We got some imaging done and they scanned my brain, you know, lots of EMF exposure, but much needed. And they were like, hey, we don't see anything. You got to follow up. And so I followed up with a bunch of doctors and the conclusion was that I had a big episode of like whenever you stand up too fast and the blood rushes, right? You know, whenever you stand up too fast and you get lightheaded, that's exactly what I did, except it didn't really hit me until I was already peeing. I felt a little bit lightheaded and it was lights out. And so, you know, there's lots of different variables. There's lots of questions. Honestly, I'm still a little like, really, that's all you guys can give me? Because, you know, it doesn't seem normal to do that, but I've realized that I cannot live my life in fear because of this. You know, I can't live my life in fear. I have to keep pushing forward. And, you know, it happened at a really inopportune time for me. I was training for revenge at that sub-3 actually, in Houston in January. So the race is coming up. I was geared up. I was feeling the most fit I've ever felt. And then my whole world came crashing down. I couldn't look at my computer or my phone. I couldn't get back to my clients. I was in a neck brace, unable to move my neck for weeks. And there was literally a point where I was like, I just couldn't stop crying. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get better. I was thinking like, oh my gosh, is my girlfriend going to leave me? Like, what's going to happen with my job? Like, how am I going to, you know, pay my mortgage and all this stuff? And my mind just, you know, it was just such a dark place for me. I didn't have any of my normal habits to kind of pull me out of there and push me forward. I couldn't just go clear my mind on a run. And I was just left alone, unable to move, kind of just feeling sorry for myself. And I called a friend about a week after it happened, and I was still really low. And he's a good buddy. His name's Sean Ziegler. He's one of my great friends. And I was just like, I just felt really called to call him. He has a really calming energy, and he pours into my cup, you know, those relationships. And he was like, Joe, the mind is so powerful. He's like, bro, you have to believe that you're going to get better. And I shifted my mindset, and I essentially just stopped feeling sorry for myself. I was like, I know who I am. I didn't spend the last 2 years developing this unwavering self-love to let something like this take me out. And literally days later, I had this miraculous comeback, dude. I had this miraculous comeback, and I'm just left with, there's only one thing that a sick man wants, and that's his health. And when you can display overwhelming gratitude for something as simple as just being healthy and having the opportunity to just live, nothing matters. Nothing matters. Nothing outside of that matters. You know, all the anxieties in your life, whatever it is, nothing matters unless you're healthy. And dude, I'm fucking healthy. I'm feeling amazing. I just actually went on my first run back today. I just hit 3 miles right before the pod. Dude, it was almost, call me crazy, but it was almost a blessing in disguise, right? Like, I made some content about this today, but the universe has a really funny way of letting us know whenever we need to slow down or take a break. And man, I'm coming back stronger than ever. So to anybody out there that's like struggling with an injury or that's in a down spot, I mean, all it takes is one mindset shift. You get to create your reality. Something's wrong in your life. You can't do this. You can't do that. When did you decide that? You know, what story are you telling yourself? Because that's what reality is.
It's so important to share these lessons because you literally just went through it. And like you said, you spent 2 years building that self-love and those habits, you know, I'm sure even longer. And to go through one experience, it feels like you just have the rug pulled out from under you as if all that work was for nothing. It's very, very humbling. And you have the resume to back it up, right? You eat right. You train hard. You sleep. You have all these fantastic things that you do that keep you level-headed. And when all that is taken away from you, you're forced into this stage to acknowledge immense gratitude. Also have this self-awareness of, yeah, I'm feeling sorry for myself, but I know I can get out of this. And with every valley, there's a peak, right? It's inevitable. And in any difficult time that I've experienced, I try to maintain that mindset. I was interviewing the CEO of Overeasy, a Harvard business school dropout. And he was talking about what it's like to build his brand. And he was like, you got to hunt for the good stuff. And after every valley, there's inevitably a peak. And the cyclical nature of things, I think, is a way, and the patterns that go along with that, I think, is a way to keep ourselves calm. But like you said, it's a frame shift. It's a mindset shift. And the questions that we ask ourselves in those moments about the stories that we tell ourselves are so important, no matter how difficult things are. And it's been super difficult this year for a lot of people, myself included. And I frame shift to all the blessings in my life all the time. Every single day, how many things I can be grateful for. And it's funny because I was reading Stephen Kotler's book, The Art of Impossible. And there's the way the dopamine shift works where you're supposed to name like 3 things that you're grateful for, right? But the dopamine really hits in after you name 10. And if you write them down, it's like a bonus. So the more things you can acknowledge that you're grateful for, the easier it'll be to shift that mindset and trigger that chemical reaction into an actual practical reality like you were talking about. And you mentioned that you were making content about this earlier, and I want to touch on your content game for a second before we wrap up. You're very on point with the personal branding. Can you give the audience some insight into what it takes to build a personal brand? And if someone's thinking about it, where can they start and how can they develop?
Absolutely, man. Great question. I think that anybody can have a personal brand. You already are a personal brand. It's who you are. I mean, your identity is your personal brand. Well, it's who you are. You know, it becomes your brand once you start advertising it, I suppose. But I mean, honestly, dude, I started my personal brand on Instagram in April of 2022. And I started posting content every day in August of 2022. And so it happened, you know, relatively fast for me, I think. But I don't think that it was by chance. Everything happens for a reason. A few things that I like to emphasize when I'm thinking about who I am and the content that I'm putting out there, it's, you know, one, obviously, what type of value are you adding? If you're not adding value, then people aren't going to want to watch. Or it's just, you know, what can you really get from that? Again, because the law of reciprocity, like you get what you give. And so I think value can be a lot of things, right? It could be motivational videos. It could be cooking tutorials. It could be a podcast, right? Find some sort of value that you can offer to the world. And that's really all you need to get started. And then after that, it's really just consistency. Consistency is just so important. And it's funny. Before I started posting content, I went to this gym in Austin called The Collective, and I ran into this dude named Matt Choi. I'm sure you've heard of him. He's a big brand online, does running videos, huge inspiration of mine, great buddy of mine. We're grabbing dinner this weekend. I pulled him aside. We had lunch and I was like, dude, I think that I can be doing what you're doing. Like, so naive, right? Looking back, like, not to be disrespectful. But at the time it sounded like, looking back, it just sounds kind of disrespectful, right? Like, I think I can be doing what you're doing. Like, he had just worked for years, you know, like, cause it's all part of the journey. And he was like, well, are you posting content every day? And I was like, no, like, I'm waiting to buy a camera and a tripod. And like, I'm trying to figure out what lighting I should get and all this. He's like, bro, you have a phone. He's like, go post every day for 30 days and then come back to me. Right. And I went and I started to apply that mindset. I actually didn't post for the whole 30 days, but I started posting more and I started to see that return. And then I'm not going to say that if you post every day, you're going to accrue a massive audience. But that's when the other things start to become important. So the value. So then if you're posting every day and it's valuable every day, and then the quality. I mean, so many things matter when making content. But to tell you the truth, there's abundance out there. There really is. Nobody watches commercials anymore. Everybody is scrolling short form content on their phones. And so where do brands put their advertising money? Into creators. And so that's become, you know, a huge, huge portion of my income is working with brands, promoting products, promoting, services, et cetera. And it's, you know, there's no one size fits all, but I believe if you are doing your best, you're doing good and you're being consistent, then you can do no wrong. And again, a large audience doesn't even equate to a successful personal brand. I know certain coaches on Instagram that are selling more fitness coaching than I am with less than 10,000 followers. And I'll be the first to admit that, right? A large audience does not equate to success by any means.
You broke down a few interesting things over there. The brazen way that you approached Matt, very cool. I know he just accomplished a fantastic run. Shout out to Matt. Yes. Right, he ran like across South Korea.
Yeah, dude. I mean, an incredible feat.
I'm kind of jealous he got to eat whatever he want. That's besides the point. But you outlined a few actionable strategies that I think people can take and implement that go outside the conventional, oh, I just post every day. It's like understanding, like, you can leverage the attention that you have if you're adding value to your audience and doing that on a consistent basis. I think that's the actionable takeaway that people can be inspired. And if you're thinking about starting a personal brand, now's the time. You don't need all the fancy lighting. Every single day I get up here and I use the camera, I use the mic, but I just got this mic and I used another mic that didn't work as well for a couple of years. It's a learning process and you iterate. So as we round this thing out, there's a question that I like to ask all my guests, and now I'm going to pose it to you. If the future version of yourself from 10 years from now were to fly in, assuming he's in that ideal spot, and offer you some advice in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
This is an easy one. This is my mantra. This is the core of who I am. This phrase means everything to me. And it's so simple, but it's keep moving forward. Every hard time in my life, just keep moving forward. What is the alternative? Are you going to sink or are you going to swim? If you're in the corner and the lions are circling around you, what are you going to do, right? Just keep moving forward until you can't move forward anymore, until your time on earth here is done. That's, you know, mentally, physically, in business, in your relationships. Never get complacent in anything. Continue to keep moving forward. And as long as you're doing your best and you believe that you're inherently good and that you're adding value to this world, then you can do no wrong. Keep moving forward.
Joe, I've had such a great time here tonight, man. This has been a blast. You rocked it. Please let the audience know where they can keep up with your journey.
Absolutely, brother. This has been a great podcast, man. You do a good job. But you guys can find me on Instagram at @themodernprimal_. That's where I'm most active. I respond to all my DMs. And you can find my supplement company, Modern Primal Provisions. That's the Instagram, Modern Primal Provisions. And that's where you guys can go and order some delicious chisel gum to help make those faces look better.
Awesome. I love it, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jonathan.